B2, number 5A.
Well, we started yesterday by seeing how the atomistic thinking doesn't lead us very far, because all those isolated ideas in an atomistic consciousness has no system of reference to which it is related, and we have seen that science is that which demands that isolated facts are related to each other and brought into a system. That's the meaning of Mrs. Eddy's term of science, that science is actually knowledge reduced to law and embodied in a system. So it is quite natural that we ask ourselves, what is that system? That is, what are the coordinates for that system? What are the classifications of that system which make up the system of reference? Therefore, we have investigated in which way we can find this system of reference, and have started then with the second point, namely with the linear thinking, where we have seen that in the Bible and in the Christian Science textbook, there is that linear development through the days of creation, a linear development which gives us the law of creativity. Therefore, we have already a law which combines or relates specific ideas in a specific irreversible order, namely from the first day to the second day to the third day to the fourth day. This is an order which is irreversible and which is forcible, which is logical in itself, and therefore we have seen that this law of creativity is a law which exists in reality, that this is not a philosophy, that it isn't Mrs. Eddy's concept of a law or of a law of creativity. And we have seen through the example of the seven stages of the evolution, then the seven steps of the 1,000-year period, where one day is at 1,000 years. We have seen it, those seven steps, in the life of a man like Jesus, fulfilling the 7 days of creation. We have seen that each creative ability, activity in our life, by finding new ideas, goes through those seven stages, until we have seen that they are not really stages in reality, but they are just facts in being. And we came to that central point where the rays of infinite truth gathered together in the focus of idea emit light instantaneously. Therefore, Jesus could, in certain cases, bring out the law of creativity in one moment, in an instantaneous healing. He could, therefore, in certain cases, reduce the time element to the point of isness, where the time element goes out of consciousness. But at that very point where we begin to see that being is not happening within time and space, but that being is free from time and space, and therefore is just existing in isness, at the point of ideas, at that very moment, naturally, we touched a quite different form of consciousness. At that point, we began to see that the days of creation become numerals of infinity, you remember? How numerals of infinity have no time concept in it, no space concept in it, no process concept in it. Whenever we regard the days of creation, which have a time concept in itself, If we regard those days of creation from the point of view of isness, then they change into numerals of infinity or into ideas. At that point where we see that there is no more a process, but that all there is isness, at that very point, naturally, our consciousness changes to a different structure of consciousness, which we tried to call the functional consciousness. Don't take me by the word. I said this is one expression which I'm not quite sure if I have found the right term, but that doesn't matter. I think teaching must not be so that it lays down the law for all eternity. Teaching is something which evolves and evolves, and therefore we have just to voice what we see at the present moment and be very free to change that or alter that, adapt it as thought goes on. So the main thing is not the term which we give, but which we have seen. The moment we touch idea, then we see that idea is only then idea when each idea reflects all other ideas. Because the moment you have idea, you solve that big question of time and space, therefore the question of matter, because matter is nothing else but the concept of time and space. If we take away from matter time and space, it disappears according to the law of Einstein. So we can see that the moment we touch idea, there is no more limitation in any way. Therefore, an idea cannot be isolated. Therefore, each idea is at the same time reflecting each other idea. And so we came to that most important conclusion, where we can now define to ourselves always exactly what an idea is. An idea is always then an idea when it has no other qualities but the reflection of all the other ideas. Then only we have the true, perfect idea. That's at that point where we tried to make those few exercises by seeing how each idea, like intelligence, is only properly understood as idea, and no more as a human concept, when that concept or that term intelligence is seen in the light of all the other ideas, of the ideas of mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love. If our concept of intelligence reflects all that, then it's no more our concept of intelligence, but the idea intelligence. Is this point clear? Because this is something which you will be asked over and over. How can I distinguish really between a thought and an idea? When do I know that when a thought comes to me, if it is of the nature of idea, or is it of the nature of a human conception or even illusion? How can I distinguish that? How can I measure that? And we have seen, if we know the ideas of the seven synonymous terms, we have a measuring rod, namely the ideas of mind, the ideas of spirit, the ideas of soul and principle and life and truth and love. And if we can measure anything according to that measuring rod, then we know it is idea. That's the nature of idea. And so we have seen that idea always reflects each other idea. But then naturally the great question came up, how do we know in the first place what the ideas characterizing mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love are? And so we took the definition of God yesterday and could see that what Mrs. Eddy did in her textbook is to take that indefinite term God and analyze it by letting that term be split up through the prism of science into its seven main categories or into the seven main aspects of the nature and essence and wholeness of God. So you remember how we drew that? We just had the indefinite term God. Then we had the prism and the splitting up 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, let's say like this. So we have here the synonyms, the seven synonyms. That's how far the definition of God goes. We have, shall I write it down here? Well, mind, spirit, the soul, principle, life, truth, and love. That's as far as the definition of God goes. Then we say, but what does mind mean? What does spirit mean? And so we went through the whole textbook and began to study what does the textbook say about mind. What does mind express? What is mind? What has mind? What does mind? How does mind interpret itself? We are just asking in every sentence about mind, what is the nature, the quality of mind? And in this way, we would get a lot of ideas, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of ideas of mind. And I put it like this. See, here would be all the range, all the many ideas of mind. The same we would do with spirit and split up spirit in all the various ideas characterizing spirit, and you would have spirit and so on. Can you see that? So here we got a list of ideas. We call it a list of ideas where we would list up everything we had found in the textbook about the nature of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Now, this is up to here, the analysis, you see the splitting up and splitting up, the analysis of science. And we have seen that science has in itself two great functions. One great function is to analyze a subject, to find out the facts and relate those facts to each other. And that the second is not so much analysis or interpretation, but the second main purpose of a science is to find methods. How did it run that definition? To find a definite for creative thinking. Let me see if I find it here. It's so good. Trust, yeah. It's to find trustworthy methods for the discovery of new truth within its own domain. You see, we are not going out of the domain of the seven synonymous terms. When we go a step further, which we have here now, namely synthesis, we could say, analysis and synthesis would be the two great points which we have in every science. So you take chemistry, first we have to analyze something, we have to analyze what constitutes the chemicals of the world. Once we have analyzed and found the elements, then the synthesis begins and we put the various elements together and make infinite new chemicals. Here it is the same thing. These are the trustworthy methods for finding new truth. Well, what we have done yesterday already in a slight way, you remember, that we were saying, all right, I take, say here, an idea like intelligence, and I regard now, I consider now
this point, say, intelligence. Can you read it? Well, you just know what it means. You see? And so, well, intelligence is only then intelligence when it reflects from all the various synonymous terms its ideas. And so, we got here a quite a new, a compound sense of intelligence. And actually, you can take any idea along the whole list of the seven synonymous terms and combine them infinitely. They reflect and reflect them infinitely. Every idea, because it's spirit, and in spirit there is no limitation. See, that's the great point about spirit, there is no limitation. Therefore, where one thing is, the whole thing is always. That we get to that wonderful sense of oneness. So here, through the synthesis, we get the calculus of ideas. How we can calculate with ideas. Just as if we would have found here, instead of ideas in arithmetic, the numbers, then we can combine the numbers endlessly and have infinite combinations, and therefore we are beginning to think creatively. That is, we are now beginning to think in ideas which are new to us, which we have never read anywhere. It's there where we sit down, can do those calculations, those idea calculations, all for ourselves, where we can close the textbook and the Bible. We will come back to this closing of the textbook and the Bible next week. It will be one of the main subjects. But just to hint where the way is leading to. That once we have found our fundamentals, that then comes the second great function of science, the synthesis, the creative thinking, where we can combine endlessly the ideas. That's what we have been doing yesterday with those exercises which we have done. And actually, we could have gone still further, because the subject is infinite. This morning somebody said, but doesn't that intelligence, for instance, isn't it that that intelligence dissolves ignorance? Isn't that an idea of intelligence, that it dissolves ignorance? Well, it is and it isn't. It is naturally not an idea that it does, that intelligence does dissolve ignorance, because intelligence is intelligence and it has no knowledge of ignorance. But now comes the other side. See, it's always yes and no. But we do well in our exercise. We could have done it yesterday. We could have well done. Oh, we should have a broader. See, get to a new platform here, to a new thing, where we could see, well, each one of these ideas react on its opposite. I like to put the opposite sign like this. That's, I think, in geometry or so, in arithmetic, you put it this, you see this sign, that's opposite. It always, every idea reacts actually for our sense as a dissolving of its opposite. Therefore, we could take all those combinations which we have made and could have supplemented it. Can you say we supplemented it? By asking us also, what does it do to its opposite? See, that it resolves its opposite, that it resolves that the intelligence as spirit, for instance, that intelligence is spiritual, therefore dissolves the belief that intelligence is material, that intelligence, which is soul, resolves the belief that intelligence has to do with an organic brain, with the body, with the brain. That intelligence as principle dissolves the belief that intelligence is personal, because person is the counterfeit of principle. Did I go too quick?
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Idea.
Oh, said yes.
Beautiful picture.
Could you move it on?
Yeah. Well, can you somehow just
in between us all. Can you somehow see why we were thinking now over 35 years and every year new and every year something new? Because the subject is just infinite. Can you see that we have not been studying 35 years the same thing over and over? But every year brought a new unfoldment, was set forward, was set forward. I always wonder if anybody knows the beauty of the adventure we have behind us for the last 35 years, when we were starting to see the sin understand. From that point on, really, the whole thing was one wonderful big adventure. I don't think that many spiritual searchers or have had such an adventure as we have had. Every year it just broadened out and broadened out, and you can perhaps now see a little bit of the enormity of the subject of Christian Science. The moment you touch the science is no more as atomistic thinking. Can you sense that? Well, you said no, I should go away. Can you? Well, we can, yes, if you want, but I don't know how I can be able to teach you everything this week which I want to teach you. But shall we say that instead of going further there, I just think we go on this side. You see, if we would have room over there, see, what I quickly said is this. Now, if we have here this side here, huh? Then can you see what I do? Instead of going further there, I go further here, huh? So this here. Now, I take this here. This is better, huh? Where I had intelligence. And so yesterday we were taking intelligence and asking ourselves, what is intelligence as idea? It is only then an idea when it reflects all the other seven. So we had taken intelligence as mind, for instance, and said that mind is the creator of intelligence. Or we have taken here one of spirit, and have said this intelligence is spiritual. Or we have taken one of soul and have said this intelligence rests on spiritual sense, for instance. Or this intelligence as principle is impersonal. And so we got the idea intelligence. That's how far we went yesterday. Now, this morning I was asked, what does that do to the human, to the opposite, you see? So you can go further and project it onto the human plane. This is the human plane. And see, how does it react on the human plane? Well, intelligence does resolve or wipe out, whatever you can say, ignorance. Intelligence naturally dissolves ignorance. But what does it mean? Again, in the seven, it means it dissolves, because the intelligence is spiritual, it dissolves the belief that intelligence is material. That's it, that's ignorance. That intelligence is material, that's ignorance. Or it dissolves from here, see, how shall I put it? It dissolves as soul, the belief that intelligence is dependent on brain, on body, because soul is the counterfeit, is the fact about body. Or it dissolves the belief, principle, that it is personal. Every intelligence which we take as personal is ignorance, and dissolves that belief. Or as life, you can take another one, you see, that intelligence as life is exalting. That intelligence is exalting as life, it's the newness of life, it's exalting us, and this is resolving the belief that it is depressive or anything like that, that it brings us backward. That as truth is consciousness, intelligence is consciousness, and that resolves the belief that intelligence is ignorant of itself, that is unconscious of itself, that it, you know, that you feel, well, intelligence, in order to be intelligent, you have to think it. That intelligence is not conscious of itself. If you would know that intelligence is conscious of itself, it would resolve the belief of ignorance, which says intelligence is not conscious of itself. You can see that in the whole universe, that the whole development of that wonderful plane of evolution went on in an intelligent way without that people were thinking about it. That evolved before people were thinking. Therefore, intelligence is conscious of itself. And this resolves the belief called ignorance, namely that intelligence has to be thought by people, has to be made conscious. Or, very important one, intelligence as love has a plan, is very planful, has an aim, has a true purpose, and this resolves the belief that intelligence is coming to a dead end, leads to a dead end, that it leads nowhere, that it isn't an intelligence that leads nowhere, that's ignorance. So you can see ignorance is always defined by the opposite of this sense of intelligence. And naturally, in the practice, in the metaphysical practice, it's a wonderful exercise to just go through all these seven positives to say what is intelligence, and then see that this resolves. See, that's the resolve, the true idea, resolving to on the human plane the false sense of ignorance. Capito? Bene. All right. Yes, that's about as far as we came. Yes, Emma?
Is this the standpoint of the analysis and the handling?
Yes. This is the standpoint of analysis and covering and annihilating, you see. The analysis is really, the great analysis is this, where you analyze what is intelligence. And by this you uncover the opposite, namely what is ignorance. And through this sevenfold contemplation of ignorance, you annihilate it. So this is the great process of science, which Mrs. Eddy said, that her Christian science was revealed to her as one intelligence, analyzing, uncovering, and annihilating human belief or something like that, or ever. That's the process.
Excuse me, would you say that what we are all prone to do is to handle the evil? That's the mysticism of which you spoke yesterday?
Yes, handling evil.
In other words, we handle it from the end of your scale, from the ignorant standpoint, and try to dissolve that, rather than going from the left-hand side, in the scientific
of
the truth.
Of the truth. You go out from the truth if you handle evil, and not try to start out from evil and handle it.
And that's the trying to start out from evil is mysticism.
It's in a way mysticism. It's just foolishness. Blunt
silliness. If you start out from ignorance, you have tried to make a reality.
Naturally.
You've made a reality, so you start out making a reality of something.
Or something which isn't,
In other words, you're trying to make it a positive.
Yes.
Instead of being the negative.
Yeah. All right? All clear? Good. So, that's how far we came yesterday. And now, I think I just would like to go over some of the questions or critics that come up against this study. I told you I would like you to equip yourself with all the arms, so to say, to be the platoons of Christian Science, and you have to know what the arguments against this study is. Now, one of the very first arguments that ever came up when Mr. Dawley presented
the synonymous terms and showed that each synonymous term would have specific characteristic qualities which are not shared by the other synonymous terms. The critic was, no, these terms are freely interchangeable. I remember especially a journal article at that time, around about 1945 or so, when a teacher in London wrote an article in the journal and very openly, more or less, attacked the teaching and said that these terms are freely interchangeable. Now, we have seen yesterday that the dictionary definition of synonymous already indicates that within certain limits these terms are freely interchangeable, but that outside of these limits they are not freely interchangeable. Now, what are the limits within they are freely interchangeable? Mrs. Eddy says in the second question, are these terms synonymous? Says they all refer to the one God. So within that limit, they are freely interchangeable. That is, the moment I want to express the nature of God, I can express it through mind or spirit or soul or principle or life or truth and love. They all refer to the one God. Mind refers to the one God, therefore it's the one mind. Spirit refers to the one God, therefore it's the one spirit. Soul refers to the one God, therefore it's one soul, etc. But outside of this, when it refers to God, outside of this, they are not freely interchangeable because they mean definitely something different. Each one of them has different characteristics, and we have seen the method of how to arrive at these different characteristics. I will come back to it again and show you the difficulties which we have in the analysis. But first of all, I think I have stated now this very clearly, that within certain limits they are interchangeable when they refer back to the oneness. The moment they have to show the nature and essence and wholeness of being, then they are no more freely interchangeable. That is, if we interchange them, we alter the meaning. The moment we give an explanation of something and say mind, we mean something very different than when we put in the same sentence spirit or soul. It expresses a different nature or essence or wholeness.